On January 13, 2009, Doctor of Anthropology and activist Jeff Halper spoke at Dalhousie University about the invasion of the Gaza Strip. This is part three of a five-part lecture series.
So, I think the rationale of that is that Israel is headed towards a Bantustan, you know, as in South Africa. In other words, and I'll show you in a minute how it's beginning to emerge. And the idea is, I think, now it's been 15 years of closure, in which the Palestinians can't, it's very difficult for them to move from island to island. It's affected Palestinian society in many ways. For example, marriage patterns. You know, the Christians living in Ramallah can't really marry with Christians in Bethlehem. And the idea of the closure, again, is to get Palestinians used to the fact that they're living in a constricted space, so that they begin to lose the idea of the West Bank as one coherent unit in which they can have a state. And in a way, it's a kind of a psychological preparation for a cantonized Bantustan in Ireland. So that's the third, the second element. The third element of the matrix of control is are the settlements. Israel has built 250 settlements in the occupied territories, in the West Bank. The settlements in the small settlements in Gaza were removed. 250 settlements in the West Bank, and obviously the settlements are not built for security reasons. The settlements represent a proactive claim to the country. So I would even go so far as to argue that there is no element of the occupation that you can explain by security. In other words, you can't explain... Okay. What? You can't explain any element of Israel's control of the occupied territories by security. In other words, you can't explain the uprooting of olive and fruit trees. You can't explain the closure. You can't explain the building of 250 settlements, in which Israel has never claimed a security justification for that. You can't explain the demolition of homes. Since 1967, Israel's demolished about 25,000 Palestinian homes in the occupied territories. And Israel doesn't claim that they've been demolished for security reasons. They're either demolished in military invasions. So we estimate conservatively, because it's hard to know right now, that in Gaza, in the last 2 weeks, probably between 5 and 10,000 homes have been demolished. I mean, this is a whole part of the attack on Gaza that sort of is hidden. You know, if you look at tank at columns of the Israeli army going into Gaza, or going into Jenin or Nablus, because Gaza's not the first time this has happened. Gaza has been replicated in Jenin, all through the West Bank, especially in 2002, when Israel absolutely destroyed the infrastructure in the Palestinian areas. So that, you know, between 5 and 10,000 houses, we estimate, have been demolished in Gaza in the last couple of weeks. So 25,000 houses. You can't explain, and I'll show you on the map in a minute if we ever get electricity, you can't explain the route of the wall. Israel is building a wall twice as high as the Berlin Wall. The Berlin Wall what are you using in Canada now? You're using meters? I think you're in between. The Berlin Wall was 4 meters high. The Israeli wall is more than 8 meters high. And the wall is 5 times longer than the Berlin Wall was. And it intrudes tremendously into the Palestinian areas. In other words, you can't explain the route of the wall that doesn't follow the border but intrudes deep inside by security. There's no security justification. And in fact, the wall is not called the security barrier. The official name of the wall is the separation barrier, because It defines what we call the demographic border of Israel, where Israel expands to the east. So you've got the wall, you've got the settlements, you've got the closure, you've got the fragmentation of the Palestinian areas. There's another element to this matrix, which is the infrastructure, the building of 29 major highways that link the settlements into Israel proper, but that are for Israeli only, they're Israeli only roads. And Israel is now building a network of smaller roads for Palestinians. Now, if this isn't apartheid, I don't know what apartheid means. Even in South Africa, you did not have a separate road system for whites and blacks. So that Israel then has expanded this matrix of control over the occupied territories. And the purpose of it is to control the country, to control the entire country between the Mediterranean and the Jordan River, and to lock the Palestinians into a kind of a Bantustan. Now, like I said, this doesn't come from the will of the Israeli public. The Israeli public doesn't want this, but it's very easy for governments, as you know, to use fear to manipulate people. So the Israelis say, we want the two-state solution, but the Arabs won't let us. In other words, the governments of Israel have told the Israeli public, and this is true of Barak. As a matter of fact, it's more true of Barak in the Labour Party than of the more right-wing politicians. They've told the Israeli public there is no political solution, period. And it's the classic clash of civilizations argument. Arabs are Arabs, Muslims are Muslims, they just want to throw us into the sea, there's no partner for peace, they're not rational like we are. And what Barak said after the Camp David Accords, I unmasked Arafat for the terrorist he really is. So when Israeli politicians, most of whom are military people, so they carry their voices carry a weight that, let's say, politicians in this country don't have. I mean, if Barak was the most highly decorated soldier in the history of the Israeli army, if he says there's no political solution, I mean, who am I to disagree? And so in many ways, the Israeli public has been disempowered, and the government is acting to make the occupation permanent and to extend Israeli control all the way to the Jordan River, even though most Israeli, that's not coming from the desire, as I've said, of the Israeli public. So that this is the context in which we have to understand the attack on Gaza. Over the years, I'm trying to say this in a delicate way, as an Israeli, I try, if I can, not to really criticize the Palestinian leadership, because it's really not my role. But over the years, for reasons that it's hard to explain, the Fatah movement, led today by Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, I don't know, has so much tried to prove to Israel that it is a partner in peace, that it's come close to being collaborationist. You know? The whole idea now, I mean, it's ironic, because in 1987, when Hamas was founded, it was founded, I mean, Israel didn't found it, but Israel provided the conditions by which Hamas could prosper. Israel wanted Hamas, because Hamas was the counterweight to the PLO and to Arafat, the secular Palestinian movement. Today, because Hamas is the effective resistance organ, today we're trying to strengthen Abu Mazen and Fatah vis-a-vis Hamas. So the whole thing is manipulation. Israel is manipulating the Palestinians, who have very little, in a sense, leverage in this conflict for their own purposes. So that Israel believes and this is, I think, is the point. Israel believes that it can win. It's a win-lose equation. And if you think you can win, if you think you can control the entire country and lock the Palestinians into a Bantustan, and you have a collaborationist leadership that will play along with this, then why compromise? Why go into real negotiations if you don't have to do that? So that what's happened over the years, of course, is that Hamas has become the major agency of resistance to the Israeli occupation. This does not mean, and I don't want to get into this, I'm not Palestinian, so I'm not going to explain to you what Palestinians think, but in a sense, I think Palestinians, you know, Palestinians are one of the most secular of all the Arab peoples. Most research indicates that, Hamas, the program of Hamas, the ideology of Hamas, represents maybe 15% of the Palestinian public. Probably not more than that. And yet, Hamas got 44% of the vote in the elections in 2006. In other words, a third of the Palestinian people voted for Hamas, even if they didn't accept the Hamas program. And on the contrary, I think there was kind of a deal struck, in a sense, where many Palestinians said, we will vote Hamas, because Hamas is the only real resisting force. Also, of course, there was a vote because of the corruption within the Palestinian Authority as well. But they said to Hamas, in my view, they said, don't take our vote as a mandate to turn us into a religious Islamicized society. That's not, we don't buy into your ideology, into your religious program, but we do see you as a legitimate Palestinian resistance force. And I think that's why Israel has to destroy Hamas. Because otherwise everything's in place. In other words, for apartheid, you've got the Annapolis process. Now, we all laugh when we talk about the Annapolis process because it seems ridiculous and it's not serious and it's Condoleezza Rice and Bush. I mean, everything they do isn't very serious. But we can't laugh it off because it is the political process. And what the Annapolis process is trying to nail down apartheid. So that you have the Annapolis process, you have Abu Mazen who's willing to buy into it, and in a sense, everything is in place. The only obstacle to actually fulfilling this apartheid idea, I don't have the map up, of a Palestinian state on 15% of the country, truncated into four islands, or cantons, as we call them in Israel, the only force standing in the way of that is Hamas. And not only Hamas, you know, the Palestinian street. So the attack on Gaza, is a two-level attack. It's an attack on Hamas, obviously, and Israel has the declared goal of destroying Hamas. But on a deeper level, it's an attack, I think, on the Palestinian people. Israel is always saying, we're going to attack the Palestinians until they get the message. And the message is, this is our country, and we're going to tell you if you're going to have a state or not, and how big it's going to be, and we're not going to negotiate with you. And we can't forget that this isn't the first time this has happened. You know, you can explain an attack on Gaza. Let's say if we just take it at face value, okay, there's been rockets thrown into Israel, national pride is hurt, Israel has to respond. I mean, you can kind of understand that at that level. What's unfathomable is the ferocity, the tremendous disproportionality of the Israeli attack. To destroy Gaza, to attack civilians indiscriminately, is you know, in other words, the ferocity is so disproportionate that it needs an explanation. And again, it's not the first time. When the second intifada broke out, during the first 5 days, there was no shooting whatsoever from the Palestinian side. And the Palestinians had an armed militia that they had gotten armed during the Oslo process. There was no shooting from the Palestinian side towards Israel. In those 5 days, Israel lobbed 1 million missiles into Palestinian civilian areas. Everything from bullets to laser-guided missiles from American Apache helicopters. In other words, the ferocity was so disproportionate to the threat, that there really was no threat, that it has to be explained. What's going on here? It can't be just security. It isn't a normal military response proportional to the threat. And I think the way you have to explain it is this idea that the Palestinians have to get the message. And the message is, this is our country, and you have no say, you are not a side. And I think that part of the idea is to disabuse them maybe of this illusion that they got during the Oslo process, that they're really a partner, that we're really sitting down and negotiating. We're not negotiating. We're giving terms to the Palestinians. We're trying to be generous, right? We like to be generous. But the Palestinians have no right to say no. And that explains the ferocity, the fact that they're resisting and that they see themselves as a people that have claims to our country. And that's how I think, I don't know what happened here, but that's why you get the ferocity of the attack on Gaza.
This lecture by Jeff Halber was brought to you by CKDU 88.1 FM in Halifax, Dalhousie Student Radio.